Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Latin Hitmaker es presentado por City National Bank, orgullosamente sirviendo a los artistas latinos y a la comunidad del entretenimiento por más de 65 años. Yo soy Leila Cobo.
It was very humbling. I had to work closely with promotions. I had to work closely with the on-air talent, with the sales managers, and it just gave me like such a good, well-rounded view of everything. And then I could see like, well, why do we do things that way? It doesn't really make any sense. But we've always done it that way. And it's like, yeah, no, we don't have to do it that way anymore. We can make it better. And I think that that's what I brought.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Latin Hitmaker, the podcast that tells the stories of the executives behind the hits and the Latin music industry. Our guest today is the president of SBS Entertainment, the only woman president of a concert promotion and event production company, Ali Alarcón. Welcome, Ali.
Thank you, Leila.
So tell us, what is exactly SBS Entertainment? Because I think a lot of our listeners may be familiar with SBS because they own La Mega, among other things, the most listened to Spanish language radio station in the country, in the United States. But SBS also has this very, very profitable and high profile event division, which you run. Tell us about it.
Yes, it's been amazing. So SBS Entertainment, like you said, we oversee, produce, promote all the things that have to do with the live events. That's what we do at SBS. And that's our focus. And we have a cute little nickname at corporate. They call us the Profit Center.
Ah, that's very cute.
It's a sweet little nickname.
It's a sweet little nickname. And the Profit Center, among other events, I guess your most high profile one is Cali Bash. Cali Bash is a 2-day reggaeton and urban music, Latin urban music event in Los Angeles. It's widely regarded as the most prestigious and very successful urban music festival in the United States. Tell me about it.
It is the premier Latin concert in Los Angeles. It's promoted by Omega 96.3 here in LA, our radio station. And it started as a one-night concert. Now, last year, after the pandemic, we did 3 nights, 3 different lineups. And this coming year, 2023, we're going to do 2 nights. But it's the top artists in reggaeton and pop in the Latin industry. It was important for me to have a strong female presence at the shows. It's always been something that I've focused on, as well as curating the lineup. You know, I think that one of the things that my team and I focused on going into events, and what's made Cali Bash so huge, is really looking at who's got music coming out, who's doing collaborations right now, how do we mix, you know, maybe someone who's not got a new hit, but they would really fit well into the lineup. And I have to give it to my team. It's not just me. Like Jorge Ramos, who has been in the biz for a long time, you know, we all work together, but he's the music guy, you know, and he tells me, you know, these are the artists that I think would fit well together. And he usually gives us like a big wish list, and then we start to pick down who we think would make the most sense. And I think that's why the show is so special.
Ali, you happen to be the granddaughter of Raul Alarcón, who founded SBS, and the daughter of Raul Alarcón, who until recently was the president of SBS. And now you're following in the steps of your grandfather and your father. What was it like to grow up in a house where music was the business.
One of my earliest memories of the business was I was a little girl. I was 8 years old, maybe 7 years old in New York. And I remember going to one of the concerts. I cannot remember which one it was, but Luis Miguel was there. Okay. And he was gorgeous. Mm-hmm. He was like in his 20s, you know, it was like the late 90s, mid 90s, maybe. And he was
at his height.
Oh, at his height. He was gorgeous, beautiful. I was in love with him. And I remember being like, who is that? And he's saying hi to my dad. And then he would go, he went out, you know, in La Tarima and he starts singing. I'm like, oh my God, what is happening? And I just remember listening to his CD all the way home as we were driving after the show and just being, you know, like buzzing with energy. And just be like, who mm-hmm. was that? Like, what's happening? I have so many memories as a kid that you look back now and you laugh and you're like, wow, that was pretty incredible. When I was little as well, my father was, he was always so gracious, and my grandfather too. They would let my school bring students to the recording studios, to the station in Manhattan.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and mm-hmm. we were allowed to, you know, they would let us talk and, you know, say happy birthday to whoever and shout out whatever you wanted. And then we'd have like a pizza party in his office. And I just remember feeling so cool. Like, look at all these people. My whole class is here where we're talking to people on the air. Like, even though the concept of speaking to New York City on the radio didn't hit me until much, much later. Shouting out, you know, I love My Little Pony. Like, we were just saying crazy things on the air and they would let us. They would let us have that moment of pure joy and silliness. And I just remember feeling so proud, so cool. Like, look what my dad's letting us do. And then like, so many memories. The last thing that I want to mention, because I miss him so much, my grandfather, Abuelo Raul, he was so passionate about the music, so passionate about speaking on the radio. Like, that was his area. He loved listening to the songs, breaking new artists. Like, he loved speaking to the people. He so much so that when even later, I think, well, probably past retirement, he had a recording studio in his house, which we also messed around with plenty of times.
I can imagine.
And he would record liners and spots, and he would record jingles. Like, he was so passionate. I remember thinking it was so odd that he had this room in his house. I didn't really understand, like, how does this get to the station? But looking back on it, he just loved what he did so much. He couldn't stop.
And you decided to go into the business, which isn't what happens all the time. I'm sure you had that moment of rebellion where you thought, I'm not going to have anything to do with this. I'm going to go study. I don't know. I'm going to be an attorney. I'm going to be a stock analyst. I'm going to be a fashion designer. Did you go through that phase, or did you always think, I'm going to be here?
No, for most of my life, I didn't really see myself going into it. I don't know if it's just youth and wanting to carve your own path and, you know, again, like you said, wanting to rebel against the status quo, you know? But I thought I would get into fashion or writing. I really didn't study broadcast. And it's funny, when I went to college out here in LA, I went to Pepperdine University, and I remember someone in my class, or in one of the classes in my year, was doing a project on my dad. And
oh wow!
And I was like, oh my God, really? And they were studying broadcast, and he chose my dad to do.
Did he know you were his daughter?
He made the connection. Yeah, he was like, Alarcón from Miami, and then he asked me. He was like, is your dad Raúl Alarcón? And I was like, yeah. And he's like, from SBS? I'm like, yeah. And I think those are the little moments where you're like, wow, you know, I was 18, 17 years old. I was a little jerk running around California, living my own life. But it's those little moments that you're like, oh, this actually might be kind of important, what my family's doing.
So what made you decide to stay there? I imagine you began working as an intern, like doing a little summer job here and there. But what made you say, you know what? I'm taking this on. Bring it on.
I was living in New York at the time. I moved to New York. I was studying fashion merchandising and marketing at Parsons. Again, just I thought that was where I was going to go. I went to cooking school. I thought maybe I'd be a chef.
Oh, that's good to know, Allie. Now I know who's going to cook for me next time I'm in LA.
I would love to. I love to cook. I have less and less time now to do it, but back then I had all the time in the world. So I took that on, and maybe that's what I would be doing if I wasn't in the business. But I was in New York, and I was still trying to figure out what I wanted to do. And I remember talking to my dad, and I had gone to a couple concerts with him when he would come into New York. And I was starting to meet, you know, other executives at the company and other people we do business with and clients. And I was starting to get that, you know, that energy again, that buzzing of like, oh, this is kind of exciting, you know, hanging out, talking business, talking about music, hearing, you know, this artist blew up, this artist is brand new, we just discovered them, like all that kind of stuff started turning the wheels. And I think I was about like 24, 25. Mm-hmm. And then I asked my dad, you know, if it would be cool to start working. I wanted to work at the station in New York. And he was like, honestly, we don't need you in New York. We need you in LA.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Interesting. So you asked your dad. Your dad never pushed you to work in the company.
No, he never did. And I think that...
Smart man.
I mean...
He knew that if he did, you would probably have said no.
As if we needed more evidence that he's just a genius. But he... Yeah, he never pushed me. I think he knew. And I don't think his father ever pushed him. You know, my dad, when he was an undergrad at Fordham University in New York, he wanted to be a doctor.
Initially, I remember.
Initially, he wanted to be a pediatrician. That didn't work out for the better. But
yeah, I can't imagine him as a doctor either.
Me either.
But yeah, we were very lucky that he went to SBS because he really... You know, Ali, he really, I think, changed and evolved the company. And then you came in and you have too, right? How do you feel you've moved SBS forward?
So when he told me I would rather have you in LA, I think LA needs, you know, some Alarcón attention. And to them, It seems, I feel like, a world away. You know, Miami and New York are close to each other, but LA is... You know, across The country to them, it's. I think they were like, somebody's got to go out there and check it out. And we always had La Raza here, that was a very strong station. But Mega was kind of trying to find its way, and I think that it just needed that young, excited, fresh perspective. I think that really catapulted Mega in LA to be what it is now, and the show Calibash. It just needed some attention. It needed some love. And I think that once it got it, because it was such a powerful brand, right? Mega in general is just such an iconic name. You know, even La Raza is a heritage station out here. It was the first of its kind. My grandfather and my father had the foresight to start the station at a time when, you know, people didn't really care if Mexican regional music was reaching, you know, the audience. They didn't care either way. So it was so forward thinking. And I think that, you know, sometimes in business, things can get stale for sure. If it doesn't move forward, everybody gets very comfortable doing things the way that they always did it. And that was kind of my first big challenge when I moved out to LA and I started at the station. And I started at, you know, I started as an AE, like, I mean, very, very entry level, a sales.
So you started in radio. You didn't start in the events department.
No. I started in sales and I was God awful at it. I was so bad. I was so bad, Layla. It was embarrassing. Truly. It was so embarrassing. I was so bad. But it was a good learning experience because, you know, it's always good to fail sometimes, because then you know, okay, I'm not really that good at that. I'm just really bad at sales. Mm-hmm. And it was very humbling, and it gave me a chance to look at everything, right? Like I had to work closely with promotions. I had to work closely with the on-air talent, with the sales managers, and it just gave me like such a good, well-rounded view of everything. And then I could see like, well, why do we do things that way? It doesn't really make any sense. But we've always done it that way. And it's like, yeah, no, we don't have to do it that way anymore. We can make it better. And I think that that's what I brought.
I imagine when you're going through that process of getting to know the company, making mistakes, stumbling, there must be also that huge pressure of, esta es la hija del dueño. Like, you know, let's just humor her. And did you feel that pressure, and did you feel you had to prove otherwise? And how do you manage with that today?
Absolutely. I just felt such a like a duty to make a positive difference and to see the company grow and make sure that it was going in the right direction. Like, it was so personal to make sure that I didn't fail irreparably. You know?
Oh my God, Allie, don't put it that way. I'm feeling pressured just hearing you.
It was a lot. And there was certainly an attitude, and I can say this because honestly, these people are no longer at the company, but there were certain people who saw me as a threat. They didn't see me as a positive or as a direct line to corporate that could maybe help them and make things better, that they could tell me what was really going on and we could actually solve it. They saw me as a threat and, yeah, humoring me, like telling me to come in at whatever time. I'm like, what time does everyone else come in? 8 a.m.? Okay, well, then I'll be here at 8. Like, that stuff would happen when I first started all the time. And it was really hard. It was hard emotionally to feel that way, because you're like, I just want to make a difference. I just want to help. Yeah.
And what do you think, what tangible change did you make that you can share with us? Is there something like in Calibash this year, especially, I looked at the lineup and I thought, this is a very different lineup from what it used to be, for example.
Absolutely. Well, that was so... how I got into events, it had been a couple of years that I was kind of finding my way in the company and learning the ropes. It was very organic because Calibash would come in like a whirlwind, you know? It would just take over the station. Everybody would be in a huff about it, and it was very chaotic. But I remember going to the first show and thinking like, wow, look at the audience. Like, the audience is freaking out. And I pulled also from my own, you know, what I would want to see on the stage. Like, before I took over the show, it was a lot of acts and only for a few minutes. So each act would play 5 minutes, and it was like 12 or 15 of them, like, or almost like 20, like, it was insane. And I was like, you know, I think the audience would be okay, because I would be okay with there being less acts, but more quality sets. Like, if we could just edit this down, curate the lineup, and let the headliners like get like a half an hour, 45 minutes. Like, I think people would be stoked to see that, because I would be excited to see that. And those were the first changes that really rocked people. When I was like, why don't we just edit this down? It was like, no way. I was like, yeah, I think the audience will like it. And I'm happy to report, Layla, that I was right. It's my favorite words ever to utter. Oh, maybe I was right.
Maybe I was right. The other thing you did, which I think is really cool, and I have to say I wasn't at the last Calibash, but you created like a whole sort of festival outside the venue. No, this takes place at Staples Center. At Staples, and then there's a whole experience before you even walked in the door, correct?
I can't take full credit for the Outdoor Fest. We used to do something when I first started working, like something a very, very, very bare bones of what it is now existed, like a few booths. And that was another thing that I was like, dude, like, we could totally improve this and make this like a thing, like an event with a stage and We could put local talent. We could, you know, and I remember one of my friends who I made at the company, Rachel Elster, who's now the GM of LA, she, as a salesperson, as a, our top salesperson, was like, you could sell that too, like big time. And so that was definitely a focus as well. It's like, where can we improve? How can we make this better? And it's totally grown into this really cool activation with a beer garden, with interactive, you know, experiences. And every year we've grown it more and more and looked at it more and more as you know, a second revenue stream, to be honest. Because that's a lot of our sponsors not only are sponsoring the event and getting you know, a commercial space on the radio, but they're buying into that festival.
You are born and raised in the States, and SBS is a company that prides itself on being a Latino-owned company that speaks Spanish in all its platforms, in radio and television. Its events feature Latin talent, and you are bilingual, bicultural. How does that play into what you are doing with the company?
I would say, I think it gives me a very unique perspective on business and how business is done. You know, I think that the way things have used to get done, and maybe still do in the Latin, I'm trying to say it as politically correct as possible, but, you know, we kind of shoot from the hip as Latinos, you know, we kind of, it's a wink and a handshake. And there's a lot of deep relationship. They've been, you know, cultivated over many, many, many years. And so there's a certain way of thinking of how things, again, how they have to get done, because that's the way it was always done. And I think that being born, I was born out here in LA and then lived in New York and raised in Miami and kind of ping-ponged in those three cities, which is fantastic and amazing. And I'm so, so grateful. Going to college in the States, interning in New York City, which, you know, getting a coffee in New York City is hard. Everything is hard. They just make it all hard so that you come out, you know, like a diamond. You start off as a little piece of coal, but they just pressure cook you until you turn into a diamond. And I think that having those experiences and having that more bicultural view of business and how things get done has certainly helped me accomplish a lot of things and not getting lost in the noise, which sometimes happens.
Do you find that the lines between Latin and mainstream are more and more blurred, or do you still feel that you're talking to one segment of the population and the other one has no idea what's going on?
Oh, no, I would say they are definitely blurred now. When I first started 10 years ago, I would say we were more segmented, but and it's so cool to have seen, but just seeing those artists that have crossed over. I mean, really the first one that I can think of is J Balvin. I know he's, you know, I'm sure some people would be like, he's not the first, but he was the first one that I recognized was, you know, was producing songs that even people who didn't speak Spanish were singing. And yeah. Bad Bunny came after J Balvin, just saying. So, you know, and, you know, Daddy Yankee, like I think of Gasolina, like I knew white American friends who knew that song. They had no idea what he was saying. Ni idea. No idea. They didn't have a clue. And I guess before him, it would have been like Ricky Martin. It's amazing. Like, yeah, I could say that, oh, Bad Bunny's definitely changed the game, changed. And I think Balvin and all the artists who have come in the last 10 years that are really chipping away and have blurred the lines. You know, I think back to the other examples of people in my youth that did that too. And I got to give credit where credit's due. We all think that we invented something new, right? I do think that today the lines are blurred, and I think that it's beautiful and amazing. I went to Aspen with my kids to ski. And I wore a Bad Bunny concert t-shirt, you know, some merch that I bought. And in the airport, there were people who were coming up to me, young Latinos y Latinas. And they were like, oh, my God, I'm going to a show in Denver. I can't
wait. I love that.
Yeah. I'm driving 2.5 or 3.5 hours in the winter to go see him in Denver. I'm like, Wow. And they worked and lived in Aspen. I would get...
That's amazing.
Yeah, we're everywhere. We're everywhere. And I think that now people, you know, can't unsee that we're everywhere, you know?
It's such a different thing, isn't it? I'm sure, do you and your dad talk about that, about how when he was growing the network, really it was an oddity almost, and now it no longer is. Do you see a tangible change in your business because of that?
Absolutely. And we get, in our business deals, we're getting onto business that didn't ever buy or want to advertise or pay for or reach Latinos. I don't want to call out any specific clients because I will get in trouble. But there were big clients that, they didn't see the need. And so now we're seeing us get onto business, big business, that traditionally never wanted to reach Latinos. And it was one of the things that I noticed in LA too. You know, when I came here and I was working in sales, I'm like, I don't get it. Why don't they want to reach Latinos? We're the fastest growing demographic in the country. We have a ton of disposable income.
And you're the majority in Los Angeles. Yeah.
So. Yeah. It didn't make any sense to me. And I've definitely seen that thinking less and less, for sure. Big companies are starting to wise up.
How would you describe your negotiating style, Ali? Are you tough, or are you walk softly and carry a big stick? What's you?
I would say I'm definitely more of like a velvet hammer. because, you know, I just find, especially, listen, again, this is a very male-dominated industry still. We have a lot of women. Women are making strides. You know, it's happening slowly but surely, but it is a very, very male-dominated industry. You really get more flies with honey than you do with vinegar. There's always a time. I believe this. Like, there's a time and a place to be tough, but I always like to come in hearing someone out, I want them to make sure they feel heard and respected, because I want to be heard and respected. But certainly there's a hammer that has to come down every once in a while to remind people that, you know, we can be respectful, we can be friendly, we can be soft and chill and have a good time. I always say, listen, we can all have a good time and make money. It's okay. But there are special circumstances when the hammer has to come down. So that's my style.
I'm sure your dad must have given you at some point or another, like watching you work, he must have sat you down and said, okay, Ali, I'm not going to interfere, and I'm guessing here, but I need to tell you this. Has there been any time when he's done that, when he said, Nena, I love you, but may I just suggest X?
Absolutely. Yes.
Can you share any of those times?
I can. What he told you? I can share, because I think it's important, especially like we mentioned, we touched on, like, he's my father. I think that there was a level of passion that was bordering on entitlement when I first walked in the door. Uh-huh. And I needed to check myself a couple of times, because although I wanted the best for the company and I did it out of love, I was throwing my weight a little bit around when I first started, thinking that it was the right way to go. And that was a moment when my father sat me down and was like, Nena, Mira, you cannot talk to people that way. You need to adjust, because there's nothing worse than an enemy that works for you.
Oh my God, that is very wise.
Listen, I learned from the best. I truly do, at all levels. Not just my father, all our other executives too, and all the people that I've met in the business. I try to look at those experiences as learning experiences, for sure. They're teaching me something, even if I'm pissed off and I don't really like them, like on a personal level, they're still teaching me something about myself. But yeah, he said, there's nothing worse than having an enemy that works for you. So tread lightly and ease up. The solution is going to come to you, but you're not going to get it by berating someone or making them feel bad about themselves, like, or coming in like a bull in a china shop. You're not going to get what you want. And he was right. He was right. It took me a couple times because, you know, it bit me a few times when I first started working at the company, and I learned. I tend to learn quickly.
And you've grown in this company in more ways than one, right? Because you've grown professionally, but you had your two small children while working at SBS. You have Indigo, who's 6. You have Suma, who's 4. How do you balance this work-life relationship?
I love my family so much. Like, I can honestly say that even though it's really hard, it can be very hard. And another wise tidbit that I got, not from my dad didn't give me this one, my aunt did, on my mom's side, my mom's sister. I have to give credit where credit's due. My dad didn't give me this one. But my aunt told me, she worked and she had 2 children, and she said, you can have it all, just not at the same time. And at first when she told me that, I was like, oh, what do you know? It's true. You can have it all, but not at the same time. So if I have to travel to a show or need to travel for business, that's a moment that I'm not with my children. At the same time, if I stay with them and I don't go to whatever it is that the business needs, whatever event, that's living proof of you can have it all, but just not at the same time. And it's difficult for sure.
So Ellie, what advice would you give to someone who is just starting in the business? And you know, I had formulated this question as for young women in the biz, but for anyone who's starting in the business, what would you tell them?
Something that, you know, I think my father's always drilled into me, even with his like book recommendations, you know, like the obstacle is the way, like there is a way through. There's a way through anything. There's a solution to every problem. It might not be the exact thing that you want, you know, and that's where the humbling and the flexibility comes in. You know, you have to be limber and ready to adapt, because if you don't adapt, you die. There's another word that my team and I, we always throw around, and I kind of credit it to the show Friends, you know, pivot. When they have the sofa and it's pivot. That's a very focused word for me and my team. Is something might happen and we might get all rattled, and the one thing I'll always tell them is like, okay, we got to pivot. It's okay. It's no big deal. Even if it is a big deal, we're going to pivot. Let's find the other way. And I think that's a really good lesson that I had to learn the hard way, by not pivoting and being, you know, being stuck or stubborn about something. And you really have to let go of the ego in order to pivot, right? Because your ego is going to tell you, no, the way that you wanted to do it is the right way and it has to be that way. And I guess my advice would be like, it doesn't. That's kind of in your head. Like, it doesn't have to look that way to be perfect and to work. So pivot, fail a little bit, but the most important thing about failing is that you have to learn from it. If you fail and you don't learn from it, it was a lost cause.
And before I let you go, Ellie, tell us what's happening for SBS Entertainment in 2023, which is literally around the corner.
Oh my goodness, so much, but so many exciting things. Other than, you know, our heritage shows that we have every year, you know, I've taken over kind of all of the events. So you're going to see more shows in New York, more shows in other markets that maybe we're not even in, like Texas, Austin, Houston, maybe something in the desert. I don't want to let go of any of our secrets, but I think you'll see, we're definitely focusing also on the Mexican regional, growing that in the event space. We've been very reggaeton heavy, and we kind of dipped our toes in New York by having the Amor show, which was much more pop and ballads, and it was a huge success. So
definitely, I'm sure,
I think dipping our toes into a couple different genres, tropical, Mexican regional, kind of focusing on growing different genres of music is going to be one of my focuses for 2023, and just expanding and making sure that all the shows are highly curated, an amazing experience that people want to come back for more.
And Ali, what would you like to do with SBS Entertainment and SBS overall in 5 years? Where would you like the company to go? Do you have a long-term plan that you can share?
I would be lying if I said that I had something specific or, you know, again, having anything that like mapped out. But I think in 5 years, I want to see SBSE dominate the live Latin industry. I want to see shows that are happening every year. It's almost like a residency, but forever. You know, that's kind of how I see the shows. Like, I see us having our heritage shows every year, never failed, refreshed, different talent, curated, experiential, always adapting. That's how I see it. And having those things mapped out ahead of time, which has definitely been one of the other focuses of mine that we didn't really have before. Everything would kind of change date and move, and then it wouldn't happen 1 year and it would happen another year. I want to see SBSE like a fine oiled machine. And then when it is, and I have, you know, a trusted team, I would like to grow within the company and move on and maybe move into corporate and kind of bring that same energy and that same idealism, if you want to call it that, of this can always be better. We can always be better. We can always be doing a better job. We can always be adapting. And how can we do it on the very, very high level of the business? So everybody watch out. I got my sights set on corporate one day. That shouldn't be a surprise. They know.
That shouldn't be a surprise.
No, they all know that.
Love to hear that. And we did not talk about your sister, Bianca, who runs the digital content part of the company. And I imagine you guys work side by side, right?
We do. Sometimes. You know, digital is very important, especially now, to the promotion of events, especially with the demo that we're trying to reach. They're on Instagram, they're on TikTok, they're buying tickets directly, you know, after those promos, they kind of just swipe up and buy tickets. So digital is a huge part of how SBSE has evolved, right? Like, we had social media handles, and if I recall, the app did exist when I first started working, but it wasn't what it is today. And that's just another example of how we have to always be adapting with the times, modernizing, adjusting.
Thank you so much. I'm very much looking forward to Calibash in January 2023. I hope to be there this time. And looking forward to see all the things you're going to do in the next few years.
Thank you so much. This has been really cool.
Thank you, Ali. It's been a pleasure. And this has been Ali Alarcón, president of SBS Entertainment. My name is Leila Cobo, and you have been listening to Latin Hitmaker. Latin Hitmaker, the Billboard, es presentado por City National Bank y producido por mí, Leila Cobo, con Nuria Net y Alex García de La Coctelera Music. Producción adicional de Andrés Rivera, edición a cargo de Daniel Mou Díaz. Suscríbete a Latin Hitmaker en Spotify, Apple o tu plataforma favorita. Los espero en el próximo episodio con más historias de las grandes cabezas detrás de los hits, aquí en Latin Hitmaker.